I'm trying to heal from betrayal trauma. Why is my marriage getting worse?
What's up, you guys? Welcome to the Therapy Brothers podcast. I'm Brandon.
I'm Tyler. We're brothers.
We're therapists.
We're not afraid of your questions.
So bring it.
All right, you guys, welcome to the Therapy Brothers podcast. I am Tyler, your wandering therapist. I am again flying solo today. Brandon is out doing some other filming again. The more handsome, probably more talented, also known as the expert, Brandon is gone with from us today. So I know that our listeners and viewers are probably a little bit disappointed because he always adds such a rich depth to the show. But we're flying solo today and I'm excited to be here with you guys. I've got a question picked out that's come through, and there's several questions inside the question that go along with the healing from betrayal. And what we talk about with betrayal is, you know, when there's been some type of infidelity, whether through addiction or through infidelity with affairs, emotional or physical affairs, that's what we would call betrayal and betrayal trauma. And it is kind of a long, hard process in the process of trying to heal from betrayal trauma. And we get a lot of questions on betrayal trauma. So I've picked out a question that hopefully covers several other questions that have been coming in, trying to kind of shoot like multiple birds with one stone. But before we do that, I just wanted to check in with you guys and ask you how your New Year's was. And I'd be interested to know, for those of you that correspond with us in the chats of the different formats or even through email and text, what your New Year's resolutions are, and if you set any, and what you're hoping to accomplish this year. And I'd be even more interested to hear the roadmap of how you're going to get there. One of the things that most of us do is we set these big goals and we can work ourselves up for 15 minutes or 30 minutes into a frenzy of excitement to be motivated to go and conquer the world and have 32 things that we're going to do this year that are massive. And then we overwhelm ourselves 2 or 3 days later when the motivation starts to wear off and we realize that every one of those goals has a set of steps and has a whole lot of work and effort that goes into those things. And I know for myself that when I've been learning how to set goals, I've had a lot more success in the more recent years when I realized that everything that we do should be focused on process. And if I'm allowing myself in my goals to have room for process, which means room for failures, room for adjustments, room for recommitments, room for accountability, room for mercy and grace with myself, if there's a way to build that into my goals, I'm much more likely to stay on the path and to be able to continue to move forward. And eventually you look back and you go, wow, I made a lot of progress this year, this last couple of years, but it happened in little tiny steps and increments at a time instead of in one big flash. And most of us would rather have it happen in the big flash because it would feel better. But the truth is that life is full of work, and that work is a beautiful, wonderful thing if we learn to embrace it and see it as part of the process. So I'm going to jump into this question today with you guys. It's a pretty long question, but I think it's worth reading because it's going to give some backstory and things as well. It says, and I think a lot of people listening will relate to this. It says, my husband says he is working recovery. He even speaks recovery, but I'm seeing no change in his habits or our daily life. Lots of talk and no action. We are both working recovery and our relationship has gotten significantly worse. Can it be that he is working and I don't see it, or are my gut feelings right? I unfortunately am not able to be a guest at this time. With separation in the near future, I feel participating would be looked negatively towards me. Here's my story. I started listening to The Betrayed, The Addicted, and The Expert. That's my brother's podcast, Brandon's podcast, and I'd highly recommend it to those of you who are trying to work recovery from infidelity, both sides of it. I started listening to that podcast when I was about 35 weeks pregnant with our third child. My initial reason for listening was to educate myself on addiction. My husband had previous alcohol abuse. As far as I knew, he was no longer drinking, but his behaviors had not changed. This was extremely confusing for me. After I started listening to the podcast, I came to realize that there may be another addiction going on. My husband was always very open about his porn use until I started to educate myself, and I never realized how pornography could have such an effect on a person and a relationship. I did an intake with Brannon when I was 10 days postpartum and have been working with one of his therapists since. My husband did an intake as well and did start one-on-one therapy, and to the best of my knowledge, has since stopped. We did Brannon's Lift program and have continued on to Lift 2 since starting to work with Therapy Utah, which is Brannon's company. Our relationship has significantly deteriorated. I do realize things get worse before they get better, but I'm at the point where I feel like I'm going crazy. I feel what I am seeing is that my husband's behaviors have gotten worse. He sleeps in almost every day, unless it's work outside of the house. There's really no contribution at home. When he gets home from work in time, he will do the bath and bedtime routine with the kids and then retreat to his room for the night. We've been in an in-home separation since I was about 30 weeks pregnant. With the first 2 to 3 weeks postpartum, he moved back into our bedroom. We no longer speak to each other unless necessary. I have been working hard with keeping up my personal and relational boundaries, and that's where I feel things really started to turn. My boundaries are not received well, and it got to the point where I removed myself and our children from the home because I was seeing behavior and a side of my husband that I had never seen before. After 2 weeks, we returned home, and it appeared that he had a change of heart. After a week, things went back to the usual way of living. My husband tries to have conversations about our relationship, which at this time do not feel safe for me to discuss, as I'm still not feeling any real change from him. What I hear from him is that I am not willing to be in discomfort to have conversations. Here are my questions. 1, is it okay to hold strong on a boundary of not wanting to speak about the relationship because it doesn't feel safe? 2, what point do you push yourself through the discomfort and have these conversations? 3, is there something that I'm missing on my end or that I could be doing differently to help our situation? 4, am I relying on him to change for us to work? 5, can someone be in the initial stage of recovery, basically speak the terminology, but have actions not follow with it? Okay, this is a really pretty in-depth question. These are all really great questions. And I think we'll probably just start from the top and kind of work through some things. A couple of things to think about here, just right off of the top before we get into these specific questions, is that when you're in the process of working and healing from betrayal and when there's been a breach of trust, that process is often much longer and much more in-depth than either side really wants it to be. And usually what we end up having is we have some instant sort of boundary violations on both sides when it happens. And it's mostly done with good intentions because we're trying to figure out how to get things better, how to get things back to normal, so to speak, how to get some of the pain gone. And some of those boundary violations actually continue to increase the problems. And so one of the things that happens is that the person who's done the betraying is often really quick to try to look at trust in a very limited sense, in a very kind of finite sense. And there's a really quick push to get full trust in the relationship back. And that quick push is often part of the problem because there's not an understanding of how trauma fits into the betrayal trauma that's happened. And so you'll see this oftentimes when like couples go into like a church leader or sometimes a well-intended therapist that doesn't understand betrayal trauma, and they'll turn to the betrayed person. In fact, this just happened just with one of our clients just a couple of weeks ago. 3 days after disclosure of the affair, they're sitting in a church leader's office, and the focus is all on the wife who's been betrayed and how she needs to hurry and forgive him and get over it so that they can heal. Now, there might be some truth to that, right? Like, we know that it ultimately for healing to happen, there's going to need to be forgiveness. But 3 days after being disclosed to, after finding out about your partner's affair, is probably not the day that forgiveness is going to fully take place for most people. And understanding that that's going to be a process and that that's going to take time, or sometimes the betraying partner will go to their partner and say, look, I've done this and this and this for the last 2 or 3 weeks or the last 2 or 3 months. you should trust me now. Everything should be good. Like, I'm working recovery. I can speak the language. I can do all of that. And that push doesn't help because they don't understand that the forgiveness process is a tumultuous one. It's an up and down roundabout process with a lot of wrestling and a lot of struggle. And it takes a while, not to mention the trust process. And the trust process is one that takes a while because the way that trust is rebuilt in a relationship after betrayal is with consistent action and effort over, and here's the key word, time. It happens over time. So if I go and attend, if I betrayed my wife, if I cheated on my wife, and I go and attend some recovery meetings for, you know, I go work the 12 steps as a lot of my clients do, which means in their mind, they go for 12 weeks and then they think they're done because they listened to a different step each week. That's probably not going to be the way that trust is reestablished. It's going to be more in terms of committing myself to the process of working the 12 steps, which if I actually work the 12 steps will probably take me much longer than 12 weeks because it'll be an in-person internal battle and wrestle with myself and with my higher power to become the kind of man that I need to be. And if I do that wrestle and I consistently go and then do my recovery activities that help me with the wrestle, that's what's going to rebuild trust over time. Now, my partner can, without having to chase it down and go, I wonder if he's acting out, or I wonder if something else is going on, or what else do I need to know? She happens to be able to just see that I've made a commitment and I'm going to do it for myself, no matter what, to be the best man I can be over time. And every time I end up going to a meeting, or anytime I end up sharing a thought about something I'd read in my books that I'm reading, or the assignments that I'm doing in my therapy, whatever it is, even if she doesn't want to hear it, the back of her brain likes to hear it because she hears that the work is happening. And if the work is happening and it feels genuine, there's little drops of trust that go into the bucket. And over time, that time allows for the bucket to fill up. And then you can have the relationship kind of lean back together. So something else that I think happens in this is a lot of times the focus comes onto fixing the relationship first when there isn't a foundation to fix the relationship on in the moment. And so couples often end up in my office and they'll say, okay, we just had this betrayal and I've got maybe this bad habit of acting out, you know, or maybe I've been having other relationships with other women. And both of those people are sitting in my office. And the first thing that they're talking about is we need some communication skills. And it's like, well, you guys are doing a plenty decent job of communicating. It's not that you don't communicate. It's the way you communicate that might be a problem. And part of the reason why the way you communicate is the way that it is because you haven't developed the skills to manage your own emotions. You haven't developed the insight to be able to see the bigger picture. You haven't given yourself time to do some of the healing that needs to take place. And so the focus comes very quickly onto the marriage. And then it feels like people are hitting a brick wall. It's like you're pounding your head against a brick wall because the marriage won't get better. In fact, it keeps getting worse. But a good marriage has to be founded on trust. And when there's no trust, it's going to be really difficult to be able to be vulnerable enough to share the things that you need to share to have the depth you want in your relationship. So one of the approaches that Brandon and I both take is we take kind of a three-pronged approach with this, which is that really there's three sort of recoveries that need to happen. There's a his recovery, there's a her recovery, and then there's the our recovery. And if the him and the her will do their own work with the intention of helping themselves heal, grow, become them their best selves, then the our recovery begins to happen as the couples lean back together and there's trust that's reestablished. And then once trust is there, it allows ground for that vulnerability where you can have the hard discussions, where you can kind of go into those places and kind of look for some of that reconciliation that comes not just from the betrayal, but maybe from things in the past relationship that were also broken. And that vulnerability, after having been through hell together, is what sort of forges the couple back together into a new relationship. And I say new, that's an important word because going back to what you had isn't worth doing the work that is pure hell to get something different. And so you actually burn, in a sense, you burn the old marriage to the ground. You rebuild the trust by doing your own work and doing your own healing and looking at yourselves and saying, how am I going to heal and who do I want to be? And then that leads to the ability to grow into something new. And I say new, that's going to be more committed. There's going to be eventually more loyalty if this process works right. And there's going to be more depth in the relationship because ultimately, this sounds weird, in the long run, there's more safety and trust on both sides. One thing that never gets talked about with betrayal is that often with betrayal, when there's been, like I say, a sexual addiction, or there's been an affair, or even like hiding alcohol or something, I know this was in this question, is that the person who gets betrayed seems to have a corner on the market with trust. They're the ones who say, you broke my trust and you have to rebuild trust with me. But the truth is that in most cases, the person who does the betraying already didn't trust their partner. They were afraid. They've been doing behaviors behind their partner's back for that very reason, that they're afraid of the partner's response, reaction, or the fact that that partner might reject them. And so they live in hiding. And when they're living in hiding, they end up going into all those places of shame, all those places of disappearing into some of the things that your husband sounds like he's doing right now. Sounds like he's living in a little bit of shame, maybe. There might be some depression too. And I can imagine that if I was in his shoes, that let's just pretend he was doing everything right in his mind. If he was living in a home where, you know, there's no discussion at all, that's a pretty hard thing to live in every day. I can imagine there's probably some level of depression. And yet that might be the best thing for you, it sounds like, with your boundaries. We'll talk about that in a second. But that's the idea, is we need to go to work on ourselves. Now, but then people say to me, well, Tyler, like, our marriage is not going to last that long. Or I can't just focus on myself. I still do have a marriage and I still have kids to raise and things. And what I would say is, yes, you do. But your marriage needs to be put in the periphery. It's like you're looking ahead and you see what you need to get done in terms of your own healing, your own growth, your own accountability. And yet off in the periphery, you still see it. It's in your field of view. You've got your marriage, because the truth is that either side of us, part of who we are is a spouse. And so I have to attend to my relationship. I still have to attend to the fact that I'm married. I still have to deal with whatever level of boundaries I have. There's still a household to run. There's still some communication that has to happen. I'm going to have to do that in a boundaried way as part of my healing, but that can't be the focus at the beginning, because if it is, it's destined to fail because there's no trust built. And so it's off in the distance. I still see it. I still attend to it. I still might do some checking in with my partner on whatever level our boundaries will allow us to do that. We're still going to have some communication. I still might share some of the things I'm learning, but I'm going to have to continually put my focus back on working from the inside out with being a spouse as part of me as I grow. So anyway, hopefully that's helpful. Let's get into your questions here. Your first question was, is it okay to hold strong on a boundary of not wanting to speak about the relationship because it doesn't feel safe? Of course, absolutely. Like, safety is probably a primary thing here. And what we mean by safety is kind of confusing sometimes, that safety often means emotional safety. And a lot of times what we look at with safety is, are our discussions going to end up being productive, or are they going to end up in a dramatic place where one or both of us ends up feeling worse or attacked or mistreated in some way by the time we're done talking about that? And so, yes, like, you should be able to hold boundaries around the types of communication that you're going to have. And let's say if your partner is going to start calling you names, you're probably not going to talk about things anymore because it doesn't feel safe. Or in your case, it sounds like even on a bigger, broader scale, you're saying, I don't feel like the recovery work is genuine or happening. And so it's hard for me to want to lean myself in, because I'm kind of afraid of leaning in when I sense that maybe things aren't really changing from the inside out for him. Okay, that's fair. You're going to have to follow and trust your gut feeling for sure. You're going to want to be able to like follow whatever that is. Now with that, saying that, it's part of what's got you in your situation right now is that you guys are living in the same home, not talking to each other. And you've been doing it for, it looks like six plus months or so, probably more than that now, since the question has been asked. And as long as you're willing to take that on as part of your boundary, that's okay. You're going to do whatever you have to do for your gut feeling. Now, this is interesting because your second question is, at what point do I push myself through the discomfort to have these conversations? And this is the hard part is that all too often for the betrayed side of things, it's devastating. It rocks your world. It just kind of knocks the wind out of you completely. And so you're kind of like swirling and everything is spinning and you don't know up from down and you feel crazy and you feel just totally emotionally spent. And so oftentimes in the healing process, you start to go through this process and you get to a place of safety. And the safety is an emotional or physical distance or anger. And it feels good to finally not be swirling like you were before. And so you're stuck in that space where you now feel better than you did, but you know that if you stay there, you're not going to be able to move forward. And it becomes a really difficult thing because it takes courage to step through and to step into something we call an awkward application, which is stepping into the process of trying to make things go better. And a lot of times that gets pretty ugly and messy, but it's not a bad thing. It's the practice. It's learning how to have those conversations again. It's learning how to open your heart a little bit again. It's learning how to take that risk of saying, The only way that I'm going to have the kind of connection in my relationship that I eventually want is to have the vulnerability. Now, I'm not going to go do that in massive leaps and bounds. I'm going to do it in a boundaried way as I feel the safety come up in the relationship. But, you know, in my practice, I get this a lot where I'm running a women's group or something. And sometimes, you know, after a year, 18 months, sometimes even longer than that, one of the women will come into my group and say, as she's checking in, she'll say, "Hey guys, I know for a fact my husband is in recovery. Like, he's doing all the right things. He's showing up with a certain presence, with humility and accountability, and he's actually engaged. And like, I know he's in recovery." And the whole group will be like, "That's awesome. We're so happy for you." And then she sits there and she says, I don't think I'm going to come anymore to group, guys. Like, and everyone's like, "Why? What's wrong? What's going on?" And she'll say something like, "Well, if he's in recovery and I know it and I'm still miserable, that means I'm going to have to do something and I don't know if I'm ready to do it." And as a therapist, I hear that and I go, "Hallelujah, we can move now. We can start pushing into that discomfort a little bit. I know there's safety established in the relationship now. I know that her husband is a safe place to land now, so to speak." And so now it's just the work of exercising that courage of leaning back in, and it will be painful and it takes a lot of work. But when that happens, and when it happens in a process-oriented, practice-oriented sort of a way, that's where the relationship starts to take its next step. So with your question, it sounds like you're feeling like right now isn't the time to lean back in because your gut feeling doesn't tell you that it's safe. And you're also feeling like there's not really, you know, genuine recovery happening. It's more of something else of just kind of going through the motions. And so what I would say to answer your question is that when you start to sense and feel that there's authentic work happening, then with your own boundaries, you can start to lean in. And I'd see it as more, instead of an all or nothing, I'd see it as more of a fluid, flexible thing where you can lean as far as you feel safe. And then you're going to eventually, if something breaks or something happens, or there's more drama that comes up, then you slowly just move yourself back to where you were safe. And then you lean again. It's like those little plastic expanding balls that can go all the way down to like the shape of a golf ball, but then they can expand all the way out to the big, like a big balloon ball. You know, that's how you view your leaning in, where you lean as much as you feel safe. And then when you need safety, you just kind of go back to the places that you know, and you can trust yourself. And then you lean again. And that's the exercise. It's just like going to the gym day in and day out and lifting weights. And over time, You start to get better at the skills of communication. You start to realize that both of you are actually invested in trying to figure it out, and little bits of trust start to happen that way. So in your situation, I'm not sure that that's quite where you're feeling like you're at right now. It sounds like there's still some decision-making on your part to decide whether or not it is a safe place to continue to even be in the relationship. And maybe you're in more of a discernment place of what the relationship needs to look like or where it needs to go than trying to heal it right now. The third question here, is there something that I'm missing on my end or that I could be doing differently to help our situation? And this one's a hard one to answer without having like a physical discussion, because I don't know your situation totally. I don't know the details. I can't have my own sense of where you guys are at, but here's some common things to think about. And this is where I direct you back to one of my favorite books that I always reference on this podcast, is The Anatomy of Peace by the Arbinger Institute. And in that book, there's a pyramid. They call it the pyramid of change, that is in the book. And it gives sort of steps that we need to take in our relationships in order to be effective in our relationships. And it talks about how to obtain what they call a heart at peace. And once you've obtained a heart at peace, then you start to develop relationships with other people that have relationships with the person you're wanting to interact with. And then you start to develop relationships with the person you want to interact with and learn about their world and become interested in them and care about them. And then you can start to talk to them and teach. And then eventually you can maybe have an influence, or you can maybe help them change. But a lot of times what we do is we put it all backwards and we try to make people change first. And we neglect all of the other things underneath it that have to be there in order for us to be effective. And so I'd maybe take a look at that and say, where am I at on that pyramid? And could I notch myself down one or two levels? I'm not going to lose anything by doing that. I can still keep my boundaries by doing that, but I might be able to be more effective at helping things go right and achieving the goals that I want to, if I can slow that process down. And so if I'm working more on obtaining a heart at peace, which would probably include the feelings and the wrestle and the process of forgiveness, it's probably going to include letting go of certain things, the process of surrender, which we talk about in recovery a lot, and we could do a whole episode on. And then it's going to include, now I'm going to go and, which sounds crazy, but I'm going to go learn about my partner's world. And that's a hard thing to balance, where I'm, in order to be effective, I'm going to learn about my partner's world. I'm going to see it with curious eyes. I'm going to be genuinely interested in it, while at the same time having to maintain and keep my own internal and external boundaries in the relationship. But that can really help, because then what you start to see is you start to see a more clear, more full picture of what's actually happening. And it'll either confirm that your gut is telling you that it's right, or it'll help you to see something bigger or broader and say, oh, I see work happening in a different way, a much different way than I want it to or than I thought it was, but I can actually see the work happening. And either one of those is going to help you to kind of start moving into more boundaries and other hard decisions, or it's going to help you start moving into leaning into those conversations that you're worried about having. So in order to get to the place where you can learn about that person's world, there's a lot of internal work and healing that needs to be happening, where I can attend to my own feelings, those feelings of anger and sadness and loss and grief and all of that that comes with it. All of those feelings matter. All of those things and feelings need to be attended to. They need to be validated and they need to be cared for. And if I'm doing that as part of my own healing process, eventually I'm going to work myself to a point where I can see the landscape differently and say, okay, I can see my partner's woundedness. I can see some of their points of view. I can even agree with some of those things, and it's still not okay what they did. Therefore, here's my boundaries. And now the boundaries get set with love instead of out of a place of fear and self-preservation. So the next one is, am I relying on him to change for us to work? In your question, there might be some of that happening, which would be totally normal. It's kind of part of the process. And in some ways, for us to work, depending on what your value system is, yeah, he's probably going to have to make some changes. You know, if I'm in a marriage right now with my wife and I happen to be, you know, looking at pornography regularly and wanting to keep a girlfriend on the side, you know, I'll give you an example. I've got a couple I'm working with right now. They're trying to figure out if they can save their marriage. And he has basically gone to his wife and said, I want to work it out. And I won't go through with signing any divorce papers or anything until we go to some couples therapy. But I really want to work it out. And yet he's going to couples therapy at the same time that he's holding on to and living with his girlfriend who he's cheated on his wife with. Now, if he doesn't change that, that inevitably is going to make the decision pretty easy for the wife to say, yeah, I'm not going to stay in the relationship, right? He would have to make some of those changes in order for her to choose to want to continue to work on it and stay in the relationship. So yes, in some ways you rely, like some of the outcome is going to depend on what he chooses to do, because your choices will depend on some of the things he chooses to do. Now, with that said, you still have choice. And a lot of times when I'm working with couples, what happens is they feel like their choice is taken from them, but really what they haven't gotten to is acknowledging that their value system can't allow them to live in a certain way. And so they'll have to make a choice to keep their values in alignment, to stay congruent with who they are, that they don't want to make. Most betrayed partners that I work with, they actually don't want to leave. They want to stay. They want to make it work. They want things to heal. And where they get stuck is that they over and over again try to give second, third, fifth, 100th, 200th chances at change, because they don't want to have to be the one to pull the trigger on saying, no, I can't live this way. Like, it's not okay for my partner to keep having other relationships outside of our marriage with the opposite sex. Like, that doesn't work for me. And because he has shown and demonstrated and maybe even said he's not going to change that, I'm going to make my decisions. I have to make that decision in order to stay congruent. And so they feel like their hand is forced, when in reality, it's still a choice. So if my wife decides to do certain things, I'm going to either have a reaction or I'm going to take the time to respond. And sometimes those things will be the same. Sometimes the reaction is a knee-jerk thing that isn't healthy. And if I pause for a minute, I can respond so that I can be in touch with my values and then make those choices. So there might be a little element of this for you, because you want things to work. I hear you trying, like you are trying so hard. I mean, look at all the things you're doing. You're doing some really good things. Like those lift programs are good that Brandon has going on. They're good things. You're putting in the time, the effort. You're going to your meetings. You're working on your therapy. You're reading books. You're listening to these podcasts. Like, I get it. Like, it's got to be exasperating to put in all of that time and work because you want it to work so badly, and yet you don't have a partner who's quite fully engaged with it, at least the way you'd hope it would be in terms of heart. The last one, your last question here is, can someone be in the initial stage of recovery, like speak terminology, and the actions not follow with it? Yes. And there's a couple of things that happen here all the time. One is that in stepping into the principles and work of recovery and healing, it sometimes looks and feels different for one person than it does for another. So I might go and work a program of healing for myself that isn't what my wife wanted me to do, and I'm still potentially improving myself, but she's not seeing it. The trick to this is that usually there's still going to be a feeling. There's going to be an energy that comes with whatever I choose to do that my partner, my wife, will pick up on. So she might not agree with how I'm getting there, but she'll feel that I'm getting there. The other way that this goes, and this is what I wonder if is going on in your situation possibly, is that there's a form of denial. It's like my least favorite form of denial in the world, called compliance. And what compliance is it's learning and knowing and doing all of the quote right things, but never having your heart engaged in doing it for the right reasons. And so in a sense, it's having a form of recovery and healing, but denying the actual power thereof. And so I'm going through the motions. And the reason I hate this form of denial is because I'll have people come into my office all the time and they'll say, man, I've been doing treatment for so long. I've been doing your group for this. I've been doing these programs. I've been going to 12-step and it doesn't work because I'm still doing this, or we're still doing this, or our marriage is garbage. And it's like, okay, the problem is that you're putting the program before your intentions for doing the program. Are you doing the program to keep your wife off your back? Are you doing it to make it so look so like you're trying so people won't leave you, or so that they won't bother you? Because if that's your motivation for doing those things, you're going to be spending a lot of your time and energy and a whole lot of money if you're doing therapy, and you're not going to get the result you're looking for because your heart hasn't engaged in the way it needs to. So I need to be doing all of these things, not so that I can speak a good game, but, you know, what's that quote? It says your actions are talking so loudly, I can't hear what's coming out of your mouth. That's exactly what compliance is. It's a guy in my group that shows up and he knows all the things to say, like everybody else's problems. He's got the answer for it. And he's going to like 4 12-step meetings a week, and he's going to therapy, and he can talk and spit the game. But the minute you ask him, hey, what are you thinking about with this assignment that I've assigned him? And he can't give me an answer because he hasn't actually done it from the inside out. Or the minute that you see that it's just going through the motions instead of actually like really fully being present and engaged, that's compliance. And that's normal. Sometimes that's a vulnerability issue thing where we kind of go through the motions and we're too afraid to be vulnerable. Sometimes it's just a lack of wanting to actually change. And so I go through the motions to try to hold on to the bits and pieces of what I want to keep without actually trying to give up the things that I need to give up in order for those things to stay. So all of these are really, really good questions. Probably could be all of their own episodes. Thank you so much. It sounds like you are fighting a hard battle. I hope that your husband is fighting a hard battle and his heart is engaged. He can say those things that he says you're not willing to be in the discomfort of having conversations, but the conversations need to happen in a constructive, in a non-dramatic, in an empathetic, and in a boundaried way. And if those rules and keys aren't in play, then it's okay not to have those conversations. So hopefully this is helpful for you guys. If you guys like these episodes, please like them, share them with people who you know might be in similar situations. The stuff we're talking about here is real life stuff. I know you're not the only one that's going through this. There's probably hundreds of people listening to this right now that are going, me too, me too, me too. Well, guess what? If you're having your own problem, if you've got your own struggle, if you've got your own question, bring it here. You can come on the show anonymously. You can come on in person if you want. You can send us a question at therapybrothers.com. Any way you've got a question, I promise you that your question will resonate with many of our other listeners, because even though we think our problems are exclusive to ourselves, they're not. It's the world we live in. And it sometimes feels good to know that we're not alone. So you guys keep up the good work. Thank you for participating. We appreciate the support that you're giving both Brandon and I, and you guys have a good week.